This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this episode's podcast promotion features two awesome 911 dispatch fan pages on Facebook. The first is the Thin Gold Line. Between the thin red, white, and blue lines of public safety lies the thinnest gold line. This gold line represents those who rarely are seen. Dispatchers. The calm voice in the dark night. The golden glue that holds it all together. Yep, that pretty much sets the stage for this fan page. And here you'll find all kinds of funny memes, 911 news, and discussions. You can also send them messages and submit questions that they can answer. The second page is Diary of a Mad Dispatcher. Now, this page has exploded with fans, and KMK, the page's creator, recently wrote and published a book called Endure, the Grayson Slade series. It has received some excellent reviews already and can be purchased on Amazon. Make sure to check out both pages as well as KMK's book. And now for the show.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon, this is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode number 44 of Within the Trenches. Now, usually I've got my co-host Whitney here with me, but we had a scheduling conflict, so I'm going to be heading this one alone. And I wanted to mention right off the bat was that episode 43 that we did with Matt, actually one of our local police officers. We did this video and it was on YouTube and it is actually doing great. We got some good comments and shares on it. So when we do more of these live episodes or in-person episodes, I should say, as opposed to over Skype, we are probably going to be recording these because we got a lot of good feedback on it. And another idea that I want to mention, and I did post a video a few weeks ago, and I'm going to repost that to see if I can get some more feedback on it. But what I want to start doing is kind of a dispatcher's roundtable type thing, just where we have dispatchers come in and maybe somebody from a training company or something, where we would go into Google Hangouts on air. And it would be myself, my co-host Whitney, and then three or four other people where we would all be on webcam talking about different things, you know, about 911. And everybody would be able to see it and they'd be able to chat on there, ask questions, and we could answer them. And then it would be posted on YouTube and as well as iTunes and spread all throughout Spreaker, SoundCloud, and Stitcher Radio. So that's another thing that we're trying to get up and going, and you know, hopefully we can get it to work out. But things are going really good for the show. And this week for this episode, I am meeting with Matt, who is the Senior Director of Product Management for Smart 911 by Rave Mobile Safety. How's it going?
Great, yourself?
I'm doing good. You know, I've been I've actually been rather busy doing things with next generation 911 stuff and trying to produce some training videos. But other than that, I've been pretty good.
Well, I think everyone's being kept very busy by next gen 911, and it's exciting. But you know, clearly, there's a lot of work to be done.
Yes, yeah, definitely. There's a lot. It seems like there's a lot of standards. You know, there's a lot of standards that. That the companies and, you know, the big organizations are trying to come up with. And I've sat through a couple of standards meetings in Indiana, actually. And, you know, I get everything that's going on, but sometimes trying to listen to how it gets started and then to put things into legislation, that just blows my mind.
Yeah, there's so many aspects to Next Gen 911 as far as what it's going to take to get it done. You know, it's a big technical problem. As you said, it's a big legislative problem. It's a big funding problem. And I say that, you know, and with all those problems come opportunities as well. But I think there's a long path to it. I think it's very exciting. I think it's going to provide a lot of great benefit and really bring 911 up to the level of a lot of other services that people experience and interact with today, right?
Yeah.
Because you know, hasn't really kept pace with necessarily all the other technology.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how there's so much technology out there. But, you know, being in the dispatch world myself, I was I was in dispatch for 13 plus years. Yeah, I started out just, you know, dispatching, and then I moved up to supervisor, and we would sit there and talk about all these different things out there, all these different ideas that could make 911 just, you know, something that you would see out of a movie, but there's so much that I have to go through that it's not quite there yet.
No, that's true. And I think a lot of it, you know, is going to be incremental. What I've seen today when it comes to next gen 911 implementations is they're really exercises in working from the inside out, mm-hmm. or the middle out, I should say. So working on how 911 calls are routed and then presented to the PSAP. So it's kind of that last mile problem, getting from, you know, the provider's central office to the walls of the PSAP. I think that's where we're seeing most of the initial movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's good because I think it does solve some issues with respect to, you know, the cost of interconnectivity. And also I think is going to allow for flexibility in routing 911 calls, let's say, in a disaster recovery scenario or an overflow right. scenario. So there's a lot of benefits to it. But I think, you know, potentially if you are a call taker, the frustrating part of it might be that you don't see that stuff.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's the same kind of call being delivered to you in the same way. And that's kind of, you know, a little bit of how we got started is we recognized that there was a really big need to improve the kinds of information mm-hmm. that get put in front of telecommunicators to make them armed or to arm them with information where they can respond to callers in a faster, better informed way so that they can make, you know, a better informed decision, especially when they're kind of dealing with a vacuum of information, when the caller is not able to speak on their behalf.
Right.
You know, it's like a silent call or a caller, perhaps that's calling from a location that they're not familiar with. We're frustrated by that. And we had some capabilities that we had started to develop for similar issues happening in higher education. We realized that there was a way to deliver a lot of robust information to a PSAP without necessarily having to wait for all of the foundation to be poured mm-hmm. for next gen 911.
Right.
So, you know, what we end up doing is providing a service where, you know, citizens and others can register robust profiles for themselves and their households and register all the communications devices that they have that they might use to, you know, interact with others every day. You know, mobile, landline, voice over IP types of services, such that when they were to place a call to 911 from any of those devices, the standard legacy call taking equipment would route that call to a workstation or a call taker's workstation, mm-hmm. just as it would today. But well, we provide a little gateway where that workstation can reach into our database and present all that additional information, like medical information or photographs of individuals or something that's becoming, I think, I expect a real challenge for call takers today is, you know, civic address. So they say something like 35% of households don't even have a landline anymore. So not wow. only, you know, what we're dealing with is 911 not been able to date to progress with the advances in technology that people have come to expect when, say, they call their bank or they call, you know, their favorite retailer
mm-hmm.
to know a lot about them. But in some cases, it's finding itself having to take a step or two back. So you're moving, you know, as people abandon landlines, you're moving from that, you know, civic, dispatchable, validated alley address backwards to, you know, a phase one or phase two location that might not be of an accuracy that's dispatchable. So, you know, by allowing people to pre-register this information, we're trying to kind of claw back at those capabilities that are kind of being eroded even, and then, you know, add and provide more on top of that.
Right. No, and I understand completely what you mean, because when I was in dispatch, there was a lot of times where we were taking calls and, you know, we'd get a hang up and we would put, you know, we would have information on there, hopefully from a different time that someone called in, and it would be, you know, in our in-house system. Otherwise, you know, it was pretty much like pulling teeth, you know, we're running blind really, because we don't have all that information. And even with some of the NSI handsets, you know, the ones with the 911 prefix, there were some of those that we were calling that actually, you know, were people using the phone to call in because it still had that 911 capability, that we started going in and adding in those numbers. And from what I found, you know, those numbers never came in the same, or multiple times, I should say, but we would have, luckily, the information. So we would get one call in and we could hear, you know, people yelling or whatever. And we would look up the phone number, that NSI number. And luckily, you know, that one had a bunch of information that someone had put in and we were able to find them. But otherwise, you know, you're right. There isn't a lot of landlines. We don't have all that information. So that's good that, you know, Smart 911, the people are able to go on, and it's smart911.com. Is that correct?
Yes. So smart911.com is both a place where individuals can, you know, learn about the service, like practitioners and professionals in 911, but it's a place where citizens go and register and create their safety profiles as well.
And you say a robust profile, and I was looking through it myself. I was actually setting it up as you and I were chatting right before this. And so how specific, you know, how deep does it go in? Because I saw that there's like a phone section and there were some other sections before you fully fill out this profile. You know, how deep does it go in?
Well, you know, the answer is that actually goes as deep as the citizen wishes to go.
Okay.
We recognize that each and every citizen has their own specific needs for communicating with 911 and their own specific level of comfort. So, you know, we provide the ability to provide extensive amounts of information, such as, you know, the names, the birth dates, the biographic statistics, photos and medical conditions, and maybe like, you know, disability type information for citizens. But, you know, very little of that information is required. So it's really kind of a form that citizens can fill out. And this form has been pre-validated by working with professionals out of like NINA and APCO and our partners and clients at various PSAPs to say, hey, this is what's important to us. These are the things that make a difference in how we make a decision around call taking and dispatch. Mm-hmm. So the form is structured in such a way that we only collect the information that makes a difference, and that by collecting it the same way each and every time, we can feel comfortable that the information is presented to the telecommunicator very consistently. So they know where it's going to appear on the screen, they know what it's going to say, and they can build those processes and that level of recognition on it.
So,
said it could be about people, it could be about addresses, and not just, you know, what 911 tends to think about as an address, which is a residential premise. But in this highly mobile environment, a family can go in and put all of the addresses that they find themselves at commonly.
Wow.
You know, their home, their work, their school. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had situations where those citizens are dialing 911 from their mobile phone, and not even necessarily because they've abandoned their landline, but just because that is the device that's near them when they find themselves at that time of need. They're picking it up. You're getting your phase one, hopefully phase two location. You know, it's multiple hundred meters away. Mm-hmm. Yet, you know, a telecommunicator where that hasn't, is able to view a smart home profile, or people have identified where they live or where they work, suddenly sees that, hey, that phone call is coming from, you know, within 200 yards of where that person lives. You know, it's now an opportunity to take something that's very hard, the situation that's very hard to very specifically address, and turn that into, you know, a dispatchable address.
Right.
And so that's what our goal is. We've had situations like that. We had a situation in rural Tennessee where we got a phase one location. So it was a rough tower location. It's a very rural area. So cell towers are serving a very large area. Individual dials 911 and there's really just gurgling and breathing sounds on the other end of the line. Normally, you know, that would actually leave that telecommunicator with very little to do. It's like very few options. Right. But in this case, that person happened to, you know, register for Smart 911 Advance, you know, showed their home address. They determined that that was in the general area of the call. They're able to dispatch a responder there. And, you know, that person really credits, you know, their life, or the ability for the responders to save their life, to the fact that, you know, they had registered in advance. So, you know, again, it's all about like kind of clawing back that data,
right,
about recognizing you never know what's going to be important in advance. So you try to collect as much as you can. And that way, you know, when the telecommunicator is, you know, running out of options and running out of information to make an informed decision on that they can, you know, drill through that and, you know, hopefully come out with that positive outcome.
So how does it actually come up for dispatch? I mean, does it pop up on an individual screen? Is this, you know, something that they're able to log into, let's say on any browser, or does it come up on, because see, the way the layout was when I was in dispatch, we had like five different screens, and one of those screens was where all of our 911 calls came on, and one of the other supervisors would be able to go in and add specific information to that one 911 screen where the Annie Alley spill and everything came out, to say, you know, this person is disabled, or, you know, any information like that would be added on there. So now, is this information that could be added to something like that, or is it actually just on, is it web-based?
Well, the answer is, you know, kind of, it's both.
Oh, okay.
The reason why it's both is because Smart 911, like Rave's other services, is a hosted software as a service solution. And what that means is that, you know, the majority of the functionality, really the propensity of it, the 80, 90% of it, is hosted in our redundant geodiverse data centers. And then we do install some small pieces of software, like consider them like helper software, mm-hmm. in the PSAP. And that software has two roles. One, it's listening to the call-taking equipment for the Annie to determine, you know, who's calling. And then that piece of software, when it sees Annie's, it goes and reaches out to our data center to say, hey, do we have information about this caller? And in the event that the answer is yes, it actually is able to broadcast or forward that information to another small piece of software that sits at the telecommunicators workstation. And it can be installed wherever. It could be on the call-taking screen. It can be on a CAD screen. It could be on a GIS screen. You know, that decision is predominantly up to both, or mainly up to the IT staff, mm-hmm. that's supporting the PSAP, and you know, and to another extent, to the call taker's preferences. They can move it around and the like. But when a call comes in, that screen pops up, and where there's a Smart 911 profile, they're able to go in and kind of drill through that information, interact with it, even retrieve the caller's location, and, you know, in some cases, if the PSAP wishes, even initiate an outbound SMS conversation with the caller.
There's that next generation 911 coming in.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of cases, you know, text to 9 or SMS to 911 isn't yet perfect. Mm-hmm. The industry and the carriers are really, you know, have been getting aggressive around what they're going to do around it. But a couple of years ago, we decided that because we have a lot of experience in delivering SMS messages for emergency notifications, that we go and put some of these features into our UI. And we sort of turned the typical thoughts around text to 911 on its head. And that's to say, in our case, for this period of time, it's not a tool for the citizens to use to say, I'm going to send a message to, you know, send a text message to 911 and ask for help. Instead, what it is it expects that the citizen dials 911 just as they do today to get the call routed to the right location. Mm-hmm. But if based on the way the call is progressing, the telecommunicator in their professional judgment says, hey, I need another option here. I need to send this person a text message, perhaps because their call dropped and I can't get back to them and I knew it was a mobile call, or perhaps because it's a silent caller. So the line's quiet, or maybe they're hearing background noises, and maybe they're concerned that the person's not in a position to speak. Mm-hmm. Well, they can at least challenge or interrogate the caller through SMS. And only upon the telecommunicator starting that and sending that first message is the citizen then able to go into and carry on that two-way conversation. So we think it's, you know, an interesting tool to put in the telecommunicator's toolbox, you know, something that we knew we could do today without having to share a lot of confusing messages with the citizens to say, well, you can text to 911, but in these areas only.
Right.
We kind of take some of those questions and some of the difficulty in having that conversation off the table. And a lot of, you know, PSAPs are, you know, hesitant to promote services like that, because if they're not sure that they can be done universally, they don't want to put confusing messages out. So that's why we kind of brought it in. We put it at the discretion of the telecommunicator and kind of made it a tool for them.
Oh, that's excellent. A coworker of mine, actually, she has a daughter who works in dispatch as well, and this is in Indiana. And, you know, she was using outbound or dispatch initiated, you know, SMS, you know, text to 911. And, you know, there was a domestic situation and she couldn't talk on the phone. So she was just texting. And, you know, the person, the callers, I don't remember if it was a boyfriend or husband, but, you know, he was there just carrying on and carrying on, and police showed up and he never knew it. So, I mean, text to 911, you know, at least dispatch initiated. It's great so far, you know, been working in that sense, but, you know, I it's probably a long ways to go, especially with standards, at least in that sense, the standards and all.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I think, you know, in the coming year or so, you're at least going to see progress on that topic. You know, the carriers at least have committed to beginning to, you know, minimally respond in a positive fashion. Mm-hmm. Text messages sent to 911 to indicate, you know, and especially in those areas where it's not supported, that it's not to dial 911, but then to begin forwarding that to PSAPs, you know, as, you know, where the PSAPs are asking for it.
Right. Now, what areas do you guys cover for Smart 911? Is it available everywhere, or are there, you know, some states that it's not available, or how does that work?
Yeah, so Smart 911 is currently available in 33 states approximately, and about 450 communities. I mean, that number, fortunately, you know, continues to change and go up. And in those areas, for individuals that register for Smart 911 at smart911.com, when a 911 call is directed to one of the PSAPs that subscribe to our service, that information will be presented. You know, there's a lot of major areas that have Smart 911. We're really pleased with the progress. For instance, the entire state of Arkansas, and major metropolitan areas like Washington, D.C. and mm-hmm. King County, Washington, Atlanta, Georgia. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, some significant availability out there. With respect to citizen registration, that's universal. Okay. Anyone can go into smart911.com and create their own safety profile. And people might question, well, why would I want to do that? There's some key benefits there in that because it's a national database, if you were to, say, register your mobile phone, and provide that critical information, maybe some medical concern that you have, perhaps even just something as simple as saying, hey, here's my emergency contacts, or here's where I live. And that if you find yourself traveling around the country for business or pleasure, you're in one of those areas and you end up calling 911, you know, you're going to be at that disadvantage where you're not familiar with the area. Right. But at least in that case, they will recognize who you are, you know, where your home is, and have that information for you. So, it's really universal as far as registration from the citizen perspective. And, you know, we continue to push out, its availability.
Well, that's good, especially because, well, and one of the reasons I was starting to fill out this, this form too, is because I was thinking that, you know, my phone that I have now, I only have a work phone, which I, you know, have for personal uses as well, but it's an Indiana phone number. So, if for some reason I called 911 and I, you know, went unconscious or whatever, I mean, you know, I'm sure they would be able to find the vicinity of where I'm at because of phase two. But, you know, otherwise, if it doesn't work, they wouldn't know. You know, this way they'd be able to look it up and find that, okay, if it's somewhere in this area, Southwest Michigan, you know, this is probably where I would be, even though it's an Indiana phone number. So I can see, you know, where it would help that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly if you had, you pre-registered that location for yourself.
So where do you see Smart 911 going within, say, the next 2 to 5 years? Where do you see the future of Smart 911?
Yeah, I mean, the future of Smart 911 is, you know, certainly, you know, increasing the availability of the service and making it available to more and more communities. But our interest is increasing the use cases that we can support. I know that's a, you know, a little bit of a technical design term, mm-hmm. but it's really saying, you know, how many different ways can we provide services that improve, you know, the mission of 911 and public safety. So what that means to us
is making additional tools available, not only for citizens who register, but in cases where citizens do not register and call. You know, so that's the kind of thing that we've implemented with our SMS chat and even some note-taking capabilities that says, well, maybe that person didn't register, but at least I can still use the chat functionality, or I can log a note against this profile and begin collecting or creating a dialogue or a diary of calls so that, you know, telecommunicators can know potentially some history behind it. And pulling in data from other sources. You know, we did some interesting trials with telematics data in King County, Washington, where we really show that it's possible to electronically deliver information about a vehicle crash as sourced by some of the telematics equipment that are in vehicles these days. To 911, so they can get a sense for, hey, is this guy calling and is this a fender bender that we're responding to, or maybe it's actually a very severe wreck, right, and we should be dispatching a helicopter. And all the way down to kind of looking for other options and other data sources. So we realize that, you know, we're very proud of the kind of citizen information that we're able to collect and the fact that we give citizens a voice and give citizens a way to decide well in advance of them being under duress, what do I want 911 to know about me? But we know that we can't get it all, and that there's a lot of other valuable data. And some of that data is tied up in platforms and systems and organizations that maybe weren't initially created to support 911 needs. Maybe they have a totally other purpose, a business purpose or, you know, a social purpose or whatever. But, you know, to provide a path for those systems to get data to 911 as well, and to provide some safety benefit to those services in addition to whatever other benefit they provide today, I think is going to be important. That's why we created our Smart 911 Connect platform. That's an idea of like a suite of APIs that other providers can back up their systems to and connect to, and use or basically piggyback on the channel that we have into the PSAP to also get their data into the PSAP. So they don't have to go around to the thousands of PSAPs around the country and create all those relationships. You know, they can come in, you know, open up a connection with Smart 911, and then as some of their customers dial 911, that they can share some of their data. And some of those examples, again, are like the telematics style data, PBX data. You know, we know that multi-line telephone systems are a real challenge for 911 in the sense that, in particular, in distributed kind of multi-campus environments where maybe a corporation is hosting a PBX platform at, let's say, their corporate headquarters, but you know, some of their satellite offices might be using that same functionality remotely. Well, a satellite office dials 911, and suddenly the alley shows up as being originated from corporate headquarters, and you're dispatching people there. Well,
I've definitely, you know, done that before.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a common problem. But, you know, if or as we develop, you know, relationships with, say, you know, PBX equipment providers, you know, we can detect when, say, a call is coming off of one of those PBXs and use the Smart 911 Connect platform to, you know, interrogate that PBX platform or the broader corporation in general and say, well, where is this call really being originated from?
Right.
And not only delivering that dispatchable address, but because the pipe that comes out of Smart 911 is so much bigger than what comes out of the Alley database today, you can begin doing things like also showing, hey, well, what is the floor plan for that facility? Are there special hazards? Or what should I know about how to access it? You know, which gate should I enter? Will there be, or who do I call to ensure that security will be out there to meet me and, you know, escort me to the caller's location? You know, who can I call if someone's not at the gate? You know, what's the landlord's number? Is there a 24/7 number there that I can call? Like, those are the kinds of things that, you know, we see us providing more of. Started to do that, but I'm really excited for some of those opportunities.
Oh, that's great, because like I was saying, when I was in dispatch, we would get phone calls, and usually, you know, they were just hang 'em calls. It would come from, for example, the courthouse. It was a two-story courthouse, and we would get a call, and it would simply say the courthouse and give an address. Well, then we would have to call down to courthouse security and have them pretty much sweep the building to go and see if there was a problem coming from anywhere. So, you know, doing this that you're talking about, that would help us a lot, because we would be able to pinpoint which room it was coming from. You know, if it was a prosecutor's office up on the second floor, you know, we would know that it was coming right from there instead of just the courthouse and not knowing exactly what's going on. I mean, there could be, you know, a gunman or something in the building, and having this, you know, we'd be able to pinpoint exactly, you know, if the secretary saw the person walk by and they were the ones who called, we would know that it was coming right from there instead of, you know, having to go through almost blind.
Yeah. And so because of, you know, some of those technologies, I mean, they provide tremendous business benefit to the users, to say, you know, the courthouse or a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And they know a lot. The platforms themselves know a lot. It's just that, you know, that pipe that we're dealing with that was originally developed in, you know, let's call it the late 70s, early 80s, to just simply deliver a dispatchable street address,
mm-hmm.
Can't communicate the amount of data that's really necessary to address that incident in the right way. And also can't rapidly adjust to the changing nature of communications. So someone has a VoIP endpoint and the guy unplugged the phone from the wall and was told to change offices or move the office upstairs. He says, sure, I'll do that myself. He plugs it in the jack on the floor, you know, two floors above. You know, that's something that the Alley database, is the way it's structured today, it's harder to keep up with those kinds of changes.
Right.
But if you're interrogating the phone system directly, you know, it's more likely that you're going to know a bit more about it. So that's the kind of places we want to go. And that's why we created that platform, because, you know, we're not a PBX vendor. That's not what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But we're, you know, creating a gateway for people that own, run, build, and manage those systems to better communicate it and to differentiate the services that they provide to their clients.
Now, is there a cost at all for Smart 911 for this program? You know, a cost of dispatch or the public?
Yeah, there's no direct cost to the public.
Mm-hmm.
I say direct in that, you know, the citizens today are providing a lot of funding for 911 through their various communications bills.
Okay.
So, you know, but for signing up for Smart 911, there's zero cost to the citizens. It's a subscription-based service that is paid for by the public safety organization, and in many cases based on 911 funds. But as we all know, that, you know, that varies greatly by state and even by municipality.
So when they fill out this you know, this form and all, does the subscription end, or, I mean, is it always there, or is it deleted out ever a certain time? You know, do people have to sign up again?
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question. The answer is that it does need to be maintained by citizens over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one interesting thing about, you know, if you take CAD notes, you know, it's called a lot of different things depending on where you are. It might talk about CAD notes, premise notes, special needs databases,
mm-hmm.
and these things that are more managed internally within a PSAP tend to rely on citizens, you know, directly reporting it to someone who's in charge of that system. So you can imagine, you know, maybe you'd get a letter at your PSAP, or maybe someone would call up and say, you know what? You know, my mother is getting particularly old. She gets confused a lot of time. I want to tell you a bit about her in the event that she calls. And you may go ahead and put that in as a CAD note.
Okay. Well,
people are very proactive when they're worried about their mom. But should the mom go to a nursing home, or should the mom pass away, you know, the first thing on that citizen's mind is, oh, you know what? I told the PSAP that you know, she had these particular needs, and I should go tell her that she's not there anymore. Well, that never happens, probably.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we do is we require the citizen to go in once every 6 months and minimally confirm that everything's okay, that their situation hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't, what ends up happening is they get an escalating series of reminders. They first get some emails, and eventually they get a voice calls, automated voice calls to all the phones that they have registered with the service to say, hey, you need to check back in and confirm everything's okay. Otherwise, we're going to age this off. At a certain point, we stop showing it to telecommunicators because, you know, as you can imagine, misleading information is, you know, potentially, you know, worse than no information at all.
Right.
So if the citizen ever comes back again and says, oh, yes, let me get around to it. It's, you know, 9 months out. They log back in. We save their information. We reset the clock. And that information begins to show. Other things that can happen, too, is, you know, people disconnect phones or they change their phone number. You know, should someone else, a different citizen, go and create a new profile with that number, you know, it's going to be what we call stolen. So that number will be disassociated from the old account and brought over to the new account. So that's another way in which the database, you know, kind of self-cleans and self-moderates.
Gotcha. Well, excellent. You know, this has been a lot of information, and that's great. You know, this sounds, you know, awesome for anybody who's going to use it, especially, you know, for the public and for dispatch. Now, is there, as we go into the wrap up of this episode, is there anything that you would like to leave the public or those in dispatch with, you know, something, any advice on using Smart 911 or signing up?
Yeah, I mean, for the public, you know, I definitely encourage them to go and sign up. It's free. Encourage them to provide the information that they're comfortable with, you know, to think a little bit about, well, what would you really want 911 to know? And what would you want to be there for them in the event that you couldn't speak? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in the event that your child picked up the phone and dialed 911 on your behalf or because they had a need, like, what would you want to be able to say? Go onto the site. You can get a sense by zip code of, you know, where it is and where it isn't. And even if it's not in your area, it's worth signing up because you never know, you know, when you're going to find yourself in a place where it is.
Right.
For the peace apps, you know, I'd encourage them to think a little bit about, you know, Smart 911 as, you know, a fantastic opportunity to not only learn more about the citizens, but to engage with the citizens. It's a very unusually outward, very visible, very high touch point that you have with citizens. And 911 typically doesn't have that. The police have public information officers and the fire department is out at various opportunities. But to actually have a forward or outward looking face to 911, I think is a great educational opportunity and teaching opportunity and just public relations opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And they should also understand, though, that while it brings a lot of capabilities that are look and feel and act like next gen 911, it is not, does not require next gen 911. It works with you know, legacy PSAP infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So it's a great stepping stone and a great way to try out some of these next gen 911 capabilities and to begin reaping some of those benefits today, you know, before you feel like you have to engage in a full blown next gen 911 rollout.
Right.
But, you know, We're very plugged into Next Gen 911, though. I actually, you know, lead one of the NINA work groups around Next Gen 911, or a kind of a side topic for it. You know, we're very dedicated to Next Gen 911. That's not to say that we're not aligned with their mission and ready to be there when everyone's ready to be there. But we're also trying to figure out, well, how can we get these benefits out as fast as possible? And you know, that's the way we're going to do it.
That's great. You know, if you're head of one of those groups, are you going to be at the nationals in, or is it Tennessee this time?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you'll be headed there.
I'll be at NINA National. I think it is in Nashville, I believe, this year. So the spring summer is a big time for some of the big shows like around NINA and APCO, and you know, we have a presence there. We love meeting with new folks to talk about what we're doing, sharing ideas, and spending a lot of time with our existing clients too to get their feedback and to hear these great stories about, you know, how it's really made a difference. So nothing energizes me, you know, as much as having that opportunity to hear those things.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll probably see you there, because this past Nationals I was there with the show in the podcast zone with Mark Fletcher of Avaya for their APN. So I'll probably be there again, and I'll be sure to see you there.
Oh, absolutely. I look forward to that, Ricardo. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for joining me on this episode once again, and you know, taking time out of your day to talk about, you know, this program. I think it'll be, you know, a great benefit to not only the PSAPs but the public. So, you know, make sure to find more information and, you know, fill out your profile at smart911.com. You can also find them on Facebook, and you can follow them on Twitter. And from the beginning, the podcast promotion. You know, this week we're featuring the Thin Gold Line, and that's on Facebook. Make sure to check them out. They've got excellent memes, stories on 911, that is. And, you know, you can submit messages to them for questions, and then they can put them on there, you know, anonymously and have other people either answer on them or begin, you know, complete discussion on it. So make sure to check them out, like them, let them know that Within the Trenches sent you. And also Diary of a Mad Dispatcher, KMK, who runs that page, just wrote a new book. It's called Endura, the Grayson Slade Series. And you can find that on Amazon.com. And I'll have all the links up for Smart 911, The Thin Gold Line, and Diary of a Mad Dispatcher. As always, you can email the show, especially if you want to be a guest or just have any suggestions for us, thejcast@thejabberlog.com. You can follow us on Twitter, which is @911podcast. You can find us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And this episode will be up and available 24/7 on thejabberlog.com, Spreaker, iTunes, and Stitcher. Thank you very much.
You just listened to Within the Trenches on the JCast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to thejcast@thejabberlog.com.